Stephen Mayne joins me. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Tracy. You are right.
Aren't we?
Very lucky relative to Zimbabwe, that's for sure.
When we hear stories like that and we just think we have absolutely nothing, nothing to complain about, but we are such a nation of whingers, aren't we?
Oh, huge whingers.
We are.
And very little to whinge about when
nothing.
It comes down to it.
We had rain.
Oh, fantastic, wasn't it?
We were talking about rain early in the program, and I've put you on the spot because I haven't warned you here, but have you got a favourite rain memory? Have you got a romantic memory of rain, sitting in the car watching a sunset with a loved one, or getting caught thunderstorm, or running through the puddles when you were a kid, when you were a little Steve?
Oh, look, my big thing was we had the tin roof, and I used to worry about the robbers, all the baddies, all the boogeyman coming, and would always, as a little toddler, I used to always sleep far better when you had the rain pouring down on the roof, and you'd think of all the baddies getting wet out there.
Yeah,
that was my little rain thing.
I loved that too. Were you a little? Were you Stevie when you were a little boy?
Yeah, a little scaredy,
little
scaredy
Stevie.
That's right.
Oh, that's gorgeous. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well. I'm well.
Did you have a nice Easter? Did you have a good break?
I had a very pleasant Easter. Yeah, didn't really. We're going away up to the Murray for the second week of the school halt, which will be nice. So, we just kicked around. Great new park opened up near us. We took the kids down there for a few hours.
Oh, good.
Bit of tennis with the kids. Yeah, it was just a nice sort of family time. Took the Tigers in. Tigers win in on Thursday night, which was. Very exciting for us long-suffering Tiger fans, worst-performed club in the last 27 years. So it's always nice to knock over the Blue Baggers.
Does that make you feel better?
I have whinged for 27 years,
yes.
About the Tigers.
Yes.
And, what is it, two or three finals appearances over that period. So, we draw solace from, beating the second-last team, for sure. Go, Richard.
And you walk with a bit of a spring in your step as a result.
That's right. It was very exciting. So.
Now, big story this afternoon, Stephen Mayne from Crikey.com, is that Premier John Brumby has said new preset pokey machines would be introduced by 2010 and replace existing machines. Maximum betting limits will be set to $5 and playing time limited. Now, the Premier spoke to Cathy Bedford on State Drive this afternoon. Let's have a listen.
You've announced time and spending limits to be mandatory features of poker machines, but will the using of these measures be optional? I'm not sure how then that will help with problem gambling.
Well, the big thing with problem gambling is when you look at all of the research on it, and bear in mind, Cathy, 90% plus of everybody who goes and has a gamble on machines, plays the machines, most people don't have a problem with machines, but some people do. And so much of our effort as a government is directed towards how we tackle problem gambling. We've done a lot of things like banning smoking, we've banned pokey advertising, we've closed down 24-hour venues, except for, of course, Crown Casino. So, and we've put caps in place in 19 communities across the state. Two weeks ago, I announced that from 2012 there'd be no ATMs in venues. And today we announced that when the new machines come online in 2010, and this is what they call the next generation machines, they'll have new technology and new programming, they will have to be programmed to ensure that they can basically pre-commit, have pre-commit mechanisms. Now, when you look at all the research, Cathy, on problem gamblers, people say they lose control. They go in there and saying, I'll spend $50 and I'll just stay there for 2 hours and that's it. But they get to their $50 or they get to their 2 hours and they lose control and say, I'll just put another 50 in, or I'll just put another 100 in, or I'll just stay another 2 hours. So this will allow people who know that they've got a problem or know who are developing a problem to pre-commit. And all of the research shows that this is probably the most important thing that you can do, along with the other measures we've taken and the banning of the ATMs. If you want to really tackle problem gambling, then this is the thing to do to ensure that gamblers don't lose control.
What do you think about that, Stephen Mayne?
Well, I think it's a good step forward. We're the world's worst gamblers in Australia.
Is that official?
That's official. We lose more per capita than any other citizenry in the world.
That's shocking.
So you would hope that, ironically, we have the world's best or lowest road toll and the lowest smoking rate. So on some threats to community well-being, we are world's best.
But
and
we're
in
also,
gambling, we're world's worst.
So, we are also the greatest binge drinkers in the world, officially.
Amongst the young.
We have eclipsed Great Britain in binge drinking, drinking for the sake of getting drunk.
Yes, yes. So, look, we have a mixed bag when it comes to these products that can harm. But, pokies are a very harmful product. So, obviously, any steps, I think particularly the spin rate, where the maximum bet at 10 down to 5 is a good step. I think you could also move on the speed of the spin. So the maximum jackpots, if you can only bet $5 a time, that's a good step. But you also want to have regulations that slow down, you know, when you push the button, how quickly the bet is concluded. It'd be nice to move on that.
How long does it take now? I mean, I'm listening to you. I've played a pokie machine once, and it was so long ago. We didn't have them in Victoria, and we had to cross the border into Wentworth up near Mildura. And I remember going there with my then husband, and after 5 minutes thinking, this is mind-numbingly boring. But I do understand the nature of addiction because I'm an addict myself, but not, I'm not addicted to gambling machines, but I understand that whole not being able to stop yourself. So... when you say the spin rate...
Well, I guess the best statistic is the fact that you can lose $12,000 in an hour on the current machines, on a one-cent machine. So a one-cent machine sounds fairly harmless, but because of the multiple bets, you can maximise your bets, and because the spin rate is so fast, that's how you can lose $12,000 in an hour on a one-cent machine. So there are a number of ways you can stop it. Reducing the maximum bet from $10 to $5 is good. Reducing the or setting limits as to how much you will spend is obviously a good initiative. I think the ATMs coming out is also a terrific initiative. Smoking bans obviously reduced pokey losses for a while there. But there are other steps you can do, and I think one of the big ones is the 24-hour venue. That if you had a shutdown period for 8 hours a day, I mean, my local pub's open all night.
Is it?
And you can go down there at 4 a.m. and you'll see 20 people who are, you know, into their pokies binge. And if you actually, you know, Brumby talked about you need to interrupt the betting. Best way to do that is to shut the venue after a certain number of hours. So they're doing a few good things. As someone who I've campaigned pretty hard against the pokies, you can always do more. And I personally think they shouldn't renew the licences in 2012. They should just say, let's go the WA model, which is pokies in the casino, and that's it.
You're with Tracy Bartram
on 774 ABC Melbourne.
Even Stephen Mayne was bopping along to that little music bed. It's a bit daggy, isn't it?
It is. It's nice.
But I don't mind, because there's not a person in the studio that hasn't bopped to that bit.
Oh, you've obviously hit the right buttons then.
Well, I think it had nothing to do with me. I've got to thank David, my producer. He's very clever. Now, Stephen Mayne, I wanted to talk to you more about pokies, but we've only got 10 minutes left. But I feel like I've been a bit Rumpelstiltskin. Who's the one who's slept for 20 years? Because I never go to pubs because I don't drink because of the addiction I mentioned previously.
Well, I'm the same with pokies. Just don't play them.
I just don't go.
Yeah.
Just don't get it. But I know there's a shocking culture out there. There's a story here. The Sheik of Dubai pays $500 million for Australia's biggest horse racing stud.
It's an amazing story. And,
it is amazing.
It sort of ties into the bigger global theme at the moment of... sovereign funds or states, particularly undemocratic states, the Russians, the Chinese, the Singaporean, and various Middle Eastern states, having all the cash at the moment,
and particularly the
Gulf states, the oil states, just swimming in tens of billions of cash, and splashing out on assets around the world, whilst the democracies are overblown with debt and dealing with a credit crisis. And this is a great story, I think, a demonstration of that, is the Sheikh of Dubai, you know, the royal family of Dubai, worth, Sheikh Mohammed, worth $18 billion.
$18 billion.
Splashes out $500 million, which is one of the biggest bloodstock deals in global history, to buy the bloodstock assets of Bob Ingham, the Ingham Chicken King, who also had a massive horse racing business as his other sideline. Yes. And he's received an offer for $500 million and he's cashed out.
His pet project.
Yeah. So
maybe now, if it's Bob Ingham from Ingham's Chickens, maybe he could put some of that money into free-range hens. That'd be great.
That would be
nice.
Because
he's got the money now.
He's made a lot of money out of chickens, that's for sure, and most of them batteries. So,
But that would make me happy as a consumer. I'd certainly like to give him some of my money then if he went that way.
Yeah, well, I think that would be a good thing. But it is also a big vote of confidence in Australian racing. I mean, people argue we have the best racing in the world, and I think there's a couple of ways you can also describe that. We have a massively subsidised racing industry where basically the owners of the race horses lose huge amounts of money, and the gamblers lose huge amounts of money, and the state governments, which license the various betting operators, have given very attractive tax arrangements for the racing industry. So we have a
really
brilliantly well-funded, well-resourced racing industry, which is why we can attract all these people from around the world to come and compete in the Melbourne Cup. So it's a huge employer, huge industry. But interesting now that the Royal Family of Dubai will now own our most prestigious bloodstock thoroughbred operations. And in terms of who makes money out of wagering and racing in Australia, obviously all those that are employed by the industry, from the strappers to the gardeners, it's a great industry for employment.
Mm-hmm.
The governments make quite a bit in tax revenue, and the thoroughbred owners, the breeders, are the others who actually make the money. And the losers are the owners, the people who own the horses, who on balance always lose a fortune.
They do, don't they?
And the punters. So the sheik's not silly. He's
no.
buying into the profitable part of the industry. And there continues a big trend of foreign governments buying up big assets in Australia. I mean, the government of Dubai already owns a 50% share of our duopoly on the wharves through P&O. The whole P&O stevedoring business is owned by the government of Dubai, the Royal
50%.
Family of Dubai. So 50% of that. Dubai interests the biggest shareholders in Mervac. They've just come in recently and bought 12% of that. So, I mean, it's interesting how the Singapore government and the Chinese government now own more business assets in Australia than the Australian government does. And the Chinese in particular are putting huge amounts of money into our resource assets at the moment, buying up the Puffin oil field in the Timor Sea and iron ore companies in WA and 9% of Rio Tinto. So there's a huge influx of investment by governments. And, I mean, we need the investment. We've got a lot of debt and we've got a huge current account deficit, and it's great to have investment. But it is interesting that the biggest flow of it at the moment is coming from rural families in undemocratic states and the Chinese and the Singaporeans.
Very interesting time. A caller has phoned in asking, what's the difference, Stephen Mayne, between gambling and investing?
Well, investing is not...
I'd love to hear your answer.
Investing is not a zero-sum game. Is that when you invest, you own something. So you own a share in something. When you gamble, you are simply putting some money down on a set of possible results, and you will probably lose everything. So in investing, it's very rare that you actually lose everything.
Unless you're borrowing to invest.
Yeah, well, a lot of the complexity that's come into the financial markets has become more and more like gambling, but there is still an important difference. As an investment addict, I have to stress that it's very, very different from gambling.
Are you an investment addict?
I own the world's biggest small share portfolio. I've got 650 different stocks, all $500 of each.
Brad McKenzie and Derek Gill and I are all looking at you with aghast.
Oh, I'm not aghast.
You're not aghast?
No, but I've known Stephen a long time.
So nothing rocks your
I'm
sock.
Surprised it's only 650.
How are you, Derek?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'll talk to you in just a minute. Lovely. Brad's in here. Brad with the traffic. Thank you, Brad.
I've never heard that sentence before in my life. It's like, will the banjo player please move his Porsche? It's blocking the driveway. never heard that either. That's a remarkable. Brad, right. Thank you for that. Yeah,
thank you, pleasure. Brad. Derek Gill, what's happening on your good show?
It's worth actually investigating why Stephen, he's calls himself an investment addict, but it's not about being an investment addict. It's as much, because you don't have time, no one's got time to investigate in depth 650 plus different companies and what their potential is like when it's time to sell or buy or whatever.
How do you do it, Stephen Mayne?
It's more about being an active participant in the system, which I think I'm reading between the lines, but I reckon that's what drives you. You actually want to be involved in what a world's all about.
Yeah, to be a shareholder activist, you want to know what everyone is saying to their shareholders. So the only way you can actually be on the receiving end of all that communication is to be on the register.
Meetings.
And so you have to buy the minimum amount. And when a company steps out of line, you've got the material and you can give them a good whacking.
Yeah,
you
can, that's right. Or you can run the flag, pile up the flag and salute them with it too.
Yeah, like this morning in the mail was the Rio Tinto annual report, and beautiful purple cover with all these Chinese language neon signs. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. That sort of just shows how the world has changed, and Rio Tinto is now totally dependent on China, and China's just bought 9% of Rio Tinto, and there's their bright purple annual report with a complete focus on China and all that sort of stuff. And you think, oh, yeah, wouldn't have seen that if I wasn't actually on the register.
If you weren't on the register, Stephen Mayne, you're everywhere. Now, Derek Gill, you're everywhere, looking tall, tanned and terrific.
Tonight I want to follow up. You were talking to Professor Wigglesworth.
Wasn't he marvellous?
He certainly was.
Wasn't he? Just terrific.
And a clear and concise thinker, and I like that scientific approach. Show me the research.
On the rumble strips.
I want to see the research before I'm going to change the position that I've put out there on the basis of what I know and understand.
And if you just tuned in, we're talking about an expert we had on just a little while ago about he's an expert in accidents at the level crossings.
Just for a moment, imagine that you're driving along a road in France, say. You're driving down somewhere halfway between, don't close your eyes while you're driving, halfway between Paris and Avignon.
Lovely.
And the very fast train, the TGV, this is a very fast train,
yes.
That's 300 kilometres an hour plus.
Yes.
It's driving down next to you.
Yeah.
What do you think the boom gates are like for the TGV?
Tell me.
There aren't any.
What?
There's no boom gates. There's grade separation.
Of course.
There's no way you can get across that track. You go under the track or over the track, depending on where it is.
Uh-huh.
And that's, as a principle, is a good place to start, I reckon. But I do want to know what you think about how we deal with this situation. Are rumble strips enough? Is it just a case of getting people to change their attitudes and their behaviours, in which case, how come the advertising campaign hasn't worked yet?
That's right.
Is it just badly designed? What do you think we ought to do? You've got the keys. You've got the checkbook, the keys to treasury. What are you going to spend the money on?
That's right. I'd like to see that happening too. We have to wind up. Stephen Mayne, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks, Tracy.
Brad, exceptional traffic as always.